Harold just counted brush strokes. It was remarkable how the simple, modest... It was remarkable how... It was remarkable how the simple, modest elements of Harold's life, so often taken for granted, would become the catalyst for an entirely new life. And though this was an extraordinary day, a day to be remembered for the rest of Harold's life, Harold just thought it was a Wednesday. Harold couldn't concentrate on his work.
Excuse me, Harold?
His thoughts were scattered, his mind elsewhere.
Sorry.
The sound the paper made against the folder had the same tone as a wave scraping against sand. And when Harold thought about it, he listened to enough waves every day to constitute what he imagined to be a deep and endless ocean.
Paxman!
Paxman!
So is there somewhere else we could talk about this?
It was difficult for Harold to imagine Ms. Pascal as a revolutionary.
Not now.
Her thin arms,
what?
Hoisting protest signs.
Huh?
Her long, shapely
Nothing.
Legs dashing from tear gas. Harold wasn't prone to fantasies, and so he tried his best to remain professional, but of course failed. He couldn't help but imagine Ms. Pascal stroking the side of his face with the soft blade of her finger. He couldn't help but imagine her immersed in a tub, shaving her legs. And he couldn't help but imagine her naked, stretched across his bed. Harold suddenly found himself, beleaguered and exasperated, outside the bakery, cursing the heavens in futility. Why was Harold talking to this man?
I know that you know.
This man was an idiot.
We're very sensitive.
What Harold didn't know was why he couldn't shake the smell of brownies from his senses, why Ms. Pascal had made his fingertips quiver and lips go numb. Harold assumed his watch was simply on the fritz and never even considered that it might be trying to tell him something. In fact, Harold had never once paid attention to his watch other than to find out the time. And honestly, it drove his watch crazy. And so on this particular Wednesday evening, as Harold waited for the bus, his watch suddenly stopped. Harold's watch thrust him into the immitigable path of fate. Little did he know that this simple, seemingly innocuous act would result in his imminent death. Harold was deep in thought. For a few brief moments, from Bourne Boulevard to Euclid Avenue, all the calculations and all the rules and all the precision of Harold's life just faded away. How perfect, then, that in this space, Anna Pascal would appear. Harold nervously made small talk. Very small talk. Harold quickly calculated the odds of making an ass of himself in ratio to the amount of time he stayed to chat. ...122 guitars, 732 strings, 257 pickups, 189 volume knobs. Here Harold stood, face to face with his oldest desire. And stand is almost all Harold did. It wasn't just about finding a guitar. It was about finding a guitar that said something about Harold. Unfortunately, this guitar said, "When I get back to Georgia, that woman gonna feel my pain." This one said something along the lines of, "Why, yes, these pants are Lycra." These said, "I'm very sensitive, very caring, and I have absolutely no idea how to play the guitar." I'm compensating for something. Guess what? And then Harold saw it. A damaged and terribly mistreated seafoam green Fender staring back at him. Despite its obvious maladies, the guitar spoke with conviction and swagger. In fact, it looked Harold directly in the eye and very plainly stated, "I rock." With every awkward strum, Harold Crick became stronger in who he was, what he wanted, and why he was alive. Harold no longer ate alone. He no longer counted brush strokes.
Harold?
He no longer wore neckties.
Right now.
And therefore no longer worried about the time it took to put them on. He no longer counted his steps to the bus stop. Instead, Harold did that which had terrified him before. That which had eluded him Monday through Friday for so many years. That which the unrelenting lyrics of numerous punk rock songs told him to do. Harold Crick lived his life. But despite resuscitating his life, reviving his hope, and instilling a few wicked calluses, Harold's journey was still incomplete. And Harold's wristwatch wasn't about to let him miss another opportunity. Harold's life was filled with moments both significant and mundane. But to Harold, those moments remained entirely indistinguishable, except for this. As Anna let out a soft sigh and repositioned herself against him, Harold knew somewhere in his heart that this was one of the significant moments. He knew she was falling in love with him. Within moments, Harold found himself running across the plaza, heading for the nearest payphone. At last, he spotted it. But as Harold neared the phone, he saw it was occupied by a nearsighted octogenarian determined to reach his daughter in Denver, no matter how many quarters it took. Fortunately, Harold remembered a bank of phones in the 6th Street subway tunnel.
The baby girl's name isn't Mrs. Epstein. My daughter's name is Mrs. Epstein.
The first phone failed to give a dial tone, and the second seemed to be splattered with a fresh batch of mucus. Harold dialed the third phone, fervently making sure to give each number key a specific, forceful push.
It's outside. She'll sign you up.
The night before his death, Harold unsuspectingly went about some usual business. He finished his outstanding audits. He made a few phone calls he had been putting off.
Listen, does your program have an age limit?
And he traveled to Ms. Pascal's, where she made him meatloaf and chocolate pudding, and the two watched old movies. It was a nice enough evening, and in any other circumstance, it would have seemed commonplace. In fact, the only thing that made this night significant was the morning it preceded.
Harold?
An otherwise ignorable fact, until the unthinkable occurred. About a man who doesn't know he's about to die and then dies. But if the man does know he's going to die and dies anyway, dies willingly, knowing he could stop it, then, I mean, isn't that the type of man you want to keep alive? As Harold took a bite of Bavarian sugar cookie, he finally felt as if everything was going to be okay. Sometimes, when we lose ourselves in fear and despair, in routine and constancy, in hopelessness and tragedy, we can thank God for Bavarian sugar cookies. And fortunately, when there aren't any cookies, we can still find reassurance in a familiar hand on our skin, or a kind and loving gesture. Or a subtle encouragement. Or a loving embrace. Or an offer of comfort. Not to mention hospital gurneys. And nose plugs. And uneaten Danish. Soft-spoken secrets. And Fender Stratocasters. And maybe the occasional piece of fiction. And we must remember that all these things, the nuances, the anomalies, the subtleties, which we assume only accessorize our days, are in fact here for a much larger and nobler cause. They are here to save our lives. I know the idea seems strange, but I also know that it just so happens to be true. And so it was. A wristwatch saved Harold Crick.